that I want to talk about before we go to lunch. Don't I look sharp this morning, don't you think?
Yes.
Took me all morning, especially to pick out this tie. You know, I just had a hard time with that part. But it really is a pleasure to be here. Somebody reminded me when I came in that this was my fourth conference that I've been to. I hadn't even been counting them, but some of y'all have, so maybe you're getting tired of some of this stuff. In fact, I got to thinking about that when I was putting this together, when Sheila called to see if somebody would be on hand to maybe address the group with our sponsorship. And it reminded me of a fellow that, that took one of these tours, these kind of a hiking, climbing tour up into the Rockies, you know, one of those big tours that they take up there. And it got late in the day. He kind of got separated from his group, you know, and he's trying to make his way back down this mountain in the dark. And he knows it's going to be pretty treacherous because, you know, there's some really sheer cliffs and some of those kinds of things that he had to navigate. Well, as fate would have it, as he's navigating his way back down the mountainside, he slips and falls off of one of those cliffs. But on the way down, he was lucky enough to grab a hold of a little limb. Some of you guys saw me bring this in here wondering what I was doing. But grab a hold of this limb, and he's just hanging on for dear life because it's not very, you know, it's not a very substantial limb. And he's hanging there, and he's looking up, and all he can see above him is just a starry sky. And he's looking down, and he can just see pitch black. He doesn't know how far it is down there. So he thinks maybe some of his compadres are up above up there on the cliff. So he hollers up to him. He goes, "Help me! Is anybody up there?" Dead silence. Nothing. Nobody. He's hung on about as long as he thinks he can, and he hollers up again. "Help me! Is anybody up there?" Still nothing. So he looks up in that starry sky and he thinks, "Well, I'll give it a try. Lord, if you're up there, I could sure use some help right now." And kind of to his surprise, he gets a word back.
"This is the Lord your God."
That's as good as I can do right now. Lord, it's so good to hear from you. Can you help me?"
"Got a couple questions for you."
Okay, Lord.
"Do you love me?"
"Yes, Lord, I love you.
"Do you trust me?"
"Yes, Lord, I trust you. Just help me, would you?"
"Turn loose of the limb."
"Is there anybody else up there?" You know, sometimes that's the way it gets to be. You know, Sheila calls. She said, "Now we need somebody to talk up here." And she said, "You know, Mike Krakowiak, he's kind of the director. Could he?" I said, "Well, Mike's not available. I'm sorry. He's going to be out of town." "Well, you know, Lee Dickerson, he does a really good job. We've heard on these. Well, no, Lee is going to be gone. How about Ron Scott? He's the director of research." And he said, "No, Ron's gone." But I said, I'm available." And she says, "Is there anybody else up there? You know, there's somebody else we can talk to." But do I have one of these deals? Does this thing work? She kind of gave me an assignment of partners in progress or partnering through progress. This is the way it sounded to me when I was putting that together last night. But, you know, when I was looking at that, I thought partnering, you know, what it means to be partners. And we've enjoyed the partnership that we've had with the Angus Association here for the last several years. But when you think about partners, whether it be business partners or whatever, you know, most of the time, what do we think? We think, if I'm going to enter into this partnership or be a partner with this person, what do we think? What do I get, right? What do I get out of this partnership? You know, what's in it for me kind of a deal? And that's a pretty common deal. But in any partnership, if it's going to be successful, if it's going to be long-term, whether that's a partnership on the business side, a partnership relationship like we have with y'all, or a partnership in a marriage, you know, it kind of has to be built a little bit on what do I have to give to this partnership, right? Somebody told me the other day that a partnership, when you just have both partners wanting to know what they can get instead of what they can give, is kind of like having two ticks and no dog, somebody said. And that could be a pretty good. But we've had a great partnership with the American Angus Association, and we really appreciate that. Another partnership that we've got, and I want to make sure I mention, Scott Wasink, Joe Wolf, are you guys here? There they are right there, our friends from Alpharma. Let's give these guys a round of applause, please. They make some great products that we use, and we partner. We have a lot of things that we give to one another as far as helping the technology to make the progress that we need to make in this industry going forward. But you know, we've got some other partnerships, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on these, but, you know, these are some of the things that we do from a giving standpoint. The National Cattlemen's Association, we're the founding member of the Allied Industry Council, one of the founding members there. We sponsor a lot of events for that thing. We were the first sponsor for the Cattlemen to Cattlemen RFD-TV program. Anybody? Let's see a show of hands. Who's watched that program? Is it any good? Is it all right? you asked those guys from the NCBA, and that was a, and I sit on the budget committee for the NCBA today, and I know that that's an important part of the revenue that we try to get in that organization. And we think it has great value, but we stepped up first and said, hey, we'll invest in this thing because it's right for the industry, it's right for our organization. And they said it made it much more easy to get the other sponsors to come on board after they had one secured. So we're proud of that situation. Like I say, I'm on the board of directors for that organization. The purebred industry, we've been working with y'all for a while. We invest in the breed pubs, in the Angus Journal, which works out really great for us. We can give from that standpoint, you know, Shauna, and we get a lot back from it, and we really appreciate that. Beef Improvement Federation was sponsored there. Certified Angus Beef, we've had the privilege of working with that group here for the last couple of years, sponsoring things like the Black Ink Basics, tours that we've had, Feeding for Quality forums. Consumer First Beef Partners is a new concept that we've got going that we're really excited about. We sponsored back at the research farm. Some of you guys have been to the research farm. We sponsored the bovine practitioners back there, the therionologists or whatever they all, the guys that do the bull soundness exams. I'm not even going to mess with that. And one of the things that I was really proud of this last summer, there at the research farm, we helped to sponsor the Youth Beef Industry Congress. And I don't know if we've got any alumni. How many alumni from the Youth Beef Industry Congress in here? You guys have ever been to that thing? About 180, you know, college freshmen through seniors. A lot of energy in that room. And we were really proud to be able to give back to the industry from that standpoint for that conference. We're partners. Yeah, we're partners in progress on products, on programs, but we think most of all, and a lot of you guys have seen this, we're partners from a people standpoint. We want to make sure that we have people out in the field to help you guys to fulfill the needs that you have. These are our cattle consultants, our PhD cattle consultants that we have around the country. The red states are the top 10 cattle states, so you can see we try to concentrate on having a consultant in a lot of those key markets that we've got out there to give you the kind of support that you need. Salespeople, we've got about 415 salespeople scattered out across the U.S., again, to make that link, to partner with you all and making sure that you get the performance that you need. And, of course, the lifeblood of our organization is our Purina dealers. And I just picked out about 2,500 of them that are significant, have significant business in the cattle business out there. We've got about 4,500 around the country, but these guys are the ones that do a significant amount of cattle business. And we really enjoy work and relationship that we have and the partnership that we have with our dealer organization. So that's kind of through people. Our mission, industry viability, you know, these are exciting times. And it depends on how you want to read exciting, but, you know, a lot of changes, a lot of things that we've heard about today. But industry viability is key for us because, again, if you guys aren't in business, we're not in business. We're here to serve the beef cattle business. So that kind of goes without saying. Even though I went ahead and said it anyway. Customer profitability is important. Those things are a little bit tougher these days. We want to help you to utilize your resources better. We hear a lot of stuff about efficiency. How do I utilize feed efficiency and some of those kinds of things? How do I use these rations better? But it really comes down to efficiency throughout the whole organization or throughout your whole business, whether it's land use, labor use, capital, and your management skills that you have out there. So it's an efficiency thing and a use of your total resources. Because we're interested in having a long-term relationship, and we understand to have a long-term relationship with y'all, it requires that there's a price-value relationship, and we keep needing to reevaluate those all the time as we go through the different programs we have. Maybe the program that you fed last year, if you're a customer of ours, which we really appreciate, maybe that's not the program that you need to be feeding this year. So we need to look at those price-value relationships. We know that you look to us for information and knowledge, and our dedication and our investment in research, we hope helps to get that information from our research farm and through our consultants. We can get that out to you because we know that your trust and confidence is the biggest asset that we have in this partnership. When I was putting this together, I thought I might reveal to you guys something that might be kind of shocking or something like that when I was putting this together. But after the slides we had this morning, I don't think, you know, you're saying, I've seen that before. You know, it's no big deal. But from a long-term relationship, if we're going to develop a long-term relationship, we need to look at where the industry's going, some of the things that Dr. Lawrence had today. And when I think about some of this, it brings to mind a question. I got one question for y'all. I want to know, and I want you to think about this before you answer, who in here has ever run out of toothpaste? I mean, the regular tube toothpaste, you know, you get it down, you don't have any more. You've run out of toothpaste. Some of y'all said that you ran out of toothpaste. Now, some of you would look at this tube, if you can see it, and say, Newlick, you're out of toothpaste, man. You're gone. Okay, but I need some more creative people here. I need some of the creative folks in here. Who have I got? Now, you got to brush your teeth twice a day, How many days you got left in that tube? Tell me. Several. Huh? Look at that thing. Now that looks like you're pretty much out. Anybody, any other bids on that thing? 10. I got 10 days right here. 3 days. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you look at this thing and maybe I like the 10-day deal. That's pretty good. Now, I've used this same tube a couple times, and the highest bid I ever got was 2 weeks. But you know, look at that. I haven't even rolled it up. Look at all that you got up in there, right? You kind of think you're out of toothpaste and you got a little bit more. And then you can put your thumb up in there and push out what's in there and kind of get it, right? Now think about it. Have you ever really run out of toothpaste so you couldn't brush your teeth? Because what do you do after you've rolled it all up and pushed it up there with your thumb? What's the next thing you do? You stick your bristles down in it. You stick the bristles down in the tube, right? And it gets a little bit of color on there. And it's surprising. What's that? Cut the tube open. That's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of toothpaste in there because, you know, things are kind of tough. All right, so you just get a little bit of color on there, and you can brush your teeth. Now, what happens when one of the folks in the household finally remembers that you're out of toothpaste, and they go back to the store, and they get you some toothpaste? Go to Reese's, I would guess, after they've been shopping in the meat department. I can't get this open. And got the certified Angus beef, and they remember to get you some toothpaste. And now what do you have? Oh, man, that thing feels heavy. Man, there's a lot of toothpaste in there. There's 6.4 ounces. Now, yesterday, I'm going to challenge you with this. Yesterday, you brushed your teeth with a cut-open tube that you had right here, you know, scraping some out on your brush. Is that what you do today? Do you just put just a little dab on the brush? Not me. I make it look just like the one in the picture, you know. I just lay a big old bead down the top of that thing. Kind of lops off the end. You know what I'm talking about. And you brush your teeth, and there's chunks of toothpaste running down your chin. Now, why is that? Because you've got this full tube of toothpaste, right? I ain't never going to run out again. Am I right? But what happens? Here you are again. You know, lo and behold, you cycle back through. Now, I would challenge you that I think sometimes the cattle business can kind of be this way, just a little bit. You know, just once in a while. Sometimes, and we've got, you know, you get all kinds of projections, whatever you want to get. I pull these projections out. I mean, there are times, is there a pointer on this? Anyway, there are times when things are a little bit tough in the cattle business. And we've got to be more creative. We've got to be thinking about, how do I get a little bit more out of this operation? Am I right? Yeah. And then there are times, I'm going to try this one. There are times when we're riding the crest of a high market. It almost worked. Riding the crest. You know, when things are going right, corn's cheap, cattle are high, making all kinds of money, what happens then? I would suggest to you that sometimes what happens, it's just like when I brush my teeth the first day with that new tube. I get sloppy, don't I? I get a little bit sloppy. Yeah, well, maybe I should be paying a little bit closer attention to my breeding programs or whatever it is. Maybe I should be, if you're in my business, maybe I should be looking at my mineral program and making sure I've got it fine-tuned where it needs to be. Yeah, I could probably get some more money for a source and age verified and getting that Angus source deal, but man, that's a lot of trouble, and I'm making a lot of money already, right? We've heard it lots of times. You know, so you get a little bit sloppy. Well, so sometimes this isn't the best news, but what I like to look at is this, because we've been through these things before, right? I've got a pointer here somewhere, where we've had these ups and downs in the market, right? I found it. But you'll notice that there's a certain fraction of the business that very seldom drops below that line. We call them the high return producers. This is the average here in the purple. And this is the high return producer. Very few times they drop below that line. Now, I like this a lot better than I used to, because it used to say what the low cost and high cost producer, and some of the folks that were putting the IRM red books together and some of those kinds that are on that committee said, you know, that's a little bit misleading. Because when you think about low-cost and high-cost producer, you could think, well, that's because they don't spend anything. In fact, that's one of the first lessons I got in the cattle business from a rancher, was he said, young man, the way you make money in that business is you don't spend anything. You know, and there's some folks that still go to that kind of a program. But what they found was those people were spending more on their genetics. They were spending more for the better bulls. Okay, they were spending more on good pasture management type programs so that they get more out of that land resource. Okay, these were the high return producers because they had a lower cost, a lower break-even cost per pound of calf produced. You get more calves, the calves are heavier, you got more pounds to sell. So just a little bit of an idea there. Think about running out of toothpaste once in a while. Hey, we saw some of this stuff already from Dr. Lawrence, but just to kind of remind you, we've got a lot of pressure on land resources, a lot of value. If you're trying to borrow against that land, it's a good thing for you today. But if you're trying to make a return against that investment, it's something to think about. He had this slide of the cost, the change in the cost and pasture value nationwide. So you think, well, I've got to have forage resources. And he saw, you know, we saw the increase in hay costs, the forage resources that we have. His prediction was that it was probably going to go up a little bit more. So we've got some cost. Regardless of how you want to look at it, it's a valuable resource. Your land resources are, your forage resources are. You need to be making sure that you're getting the most efficiency out of that. We think we have some ways to maybe help you with that. On labor resources, yeah, this is just a little chart from National Ag Statistics Service. You know, you can see that, of course, labor costs have gone up. But one of the things that I look at is here's the non-farm labor, non-farm wages are on top. Here's the farm wages here. Here's minimum wage. You know, with the unemployment that we've got, the more feedback that I get from everybody, whether it's retailers downtown or people out on the ranch, is, man, I just can't seem to find good help. Is that true? Just can't find. You can get this guy if you pay this guy up here, maybe you can get him, you know, kind of a deal. And if this is you, this farm wage that you've got here, the $10 an hour that it shows on here, how much time do you need to be spending on those $10 an hour jobs? And maybe in today's economy and the way things are, maybe you need to be spending some time on the $100 an hour jobs from a management and marketing standpoint of your cattle operation. I was putting on a session in Nashville on February 20, came out in the USA Today. Oil broke or closed at $100 a barrel for the first time. You know, it's funny that it looks so much better when you're going back down through $100 than it did when you were coming up through it the first time. And we have broken down through that, but we do know that fuel costs, energy costs are going to be higher. We do have some good news, you know, the per capita spending, you know, on great branded programs like y'all have. I mean, that helps on the per capita spending part, gets more dollars back into the industry so that we all have more dollars to use to improve our industry and to make progress. I also like to show this slide every chance I get to remind people that I took the marketing position with Purina right here in 1997, see? And we got this kind of... You think it's a coincidence, Jim? I don't know. Anyway, point is, I am technology now more than ever. The stuff that we've got out here, if you'll take a chance to come by the booth and talk to us. You know, IM Technology, Intake Modifying Technology, is a unique program that we have within the Land O'Lakes Purina feed system. It creates the stable rumen environment so that you get more out of that forage resources. So your land utilization, your feed efficiency is better. It saves the labor of daily feeding, whether that's your labor or, heaven forbid, you have to hire your relatives or something to work for you. You know, sometimes you get that desperate. Or some of these kinds of things from a labor standpoint. It matches the nutrient need from a management standpoint with forage quality and quantity. Eliminates the guesswork of, do I have the right supplement out there? Do I have the right amounts for every cattle that's in that particular pasture? And it also can reduce your capital requirements. It's a little bit more complicated, but if we're looking at taking cattle to heavier weights, which we know is going to be at a premium here for the next few years as we look at the high grain prices, there are some ways through that technology that you can do that without having to increase your capital requirements. There's some ways to look at feeding costs that we've got on our website on cattlenutrition.com if you want to play with the numbers to see how much it could save you on that deal. And I had to, you know, a lot of times I'll use, like, Dr. Lawrence as the guy that I quote, but since he was going to be here, I thought if I should use somebody else. I don't know if I had to go back this far to Maynard Keynes, but anyway, an economist, 1883 to 1946. But I thought it was really true, you know, when he said the difficulty lies not so much in developing new ideas, but in escaping from the old ones. And I think in a traditional business like we have in the cattle business, even though we have all these great technologies that you guys have looked at this morning, sometimes it's a little bit hard to get away from what we've always done, you know. So I think that's important to look at. One quick idea that I want to share with you, and it won't take too long. This is kind of escaping these old ideas. What I've got here is a chart from a ranch in New Mexico that was using our Superlix liquid feed product. Okay, back here, they were using our product, and they'd come back to the research farm, and they heard the whole spiel and all that stuff. And the problem was, they believed everything we told them. Okay, you know, it happens sometimes. You know, and so they said, well, so what you're telling us is, if we put this feed out there, the cows consume the Superlix based on, one, their nutrient need, what they need for their body stores and all those kinds of things, plus what they need to supplement for the forage, right? So they do the work of balancing the ration for us with this Superlix feed. Well, that's right. And he goes, well, why in the world am I out here trying to figure out when I need to put the Superlix tanks out and when I need to take them up? I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just going to make sure that those Superlix tanks are charged every day so that if a cow wants some Superlix, she can go and eat it all year long, year-round feeding. Well, when you say year-round feeding to a lot of folks, they think, oh, that means you're going out there and dumping range cubes or something out there every day. That's not what we're talking about. Here's what happened, just to let you know. Here's the 2 years when they were trying to evaluate the forage, the condition of their cows, and the stage of production, and trying to figure out when they needed to put out Superlix. Here's what they did. They put it out on a seasonal basis, and those cows ate about 560 pounds of Superlix for that total year. Or they averaged about 3.5 pounds, something like that, a day. After they decided to believe us and put it out year-round, had it charged all year, didn't take the product up, that next year they consumed 471 pounds, less total Superlix. Okay, and their average intake was around just over 3. Their average intake, oh, this is for the year. Their average intake was right around a pound, 1.29 pounds. Next year, a little different weather conditions, 155, 0.83 this year, 1.2. The thing is, after they went to leaving it out there year-round and letting the cows decide when they needed the product, they actually fed less total feed. Well, you can always feed less total feed, but what's the performance parameters here? Well, if you look at this, this is back when they were putting out seasonally. As they went to year-round feeding, their conception rates went up, both in the next 2 years, up to almost 98%. We got to 93, I think that's what that, 98, and we saw that little glitch, and we said, uh-oh, these guys aren't going to be happy with us now. Well, they said, no, we're really pleased because with the turnover that we had in the cow herd, this is a lot better performance than what we had expected. So they're still pleased with it, and they still continue to do it. So conception rates have gone up. Here's what's happened to weaning weights on the steer calves, weaning weights on the heifer calves, producing a lot more pounds of beef from the same acreage, the same resources that they had before by going to the year-round, by taking ion technology at its word. Why? We think it's because we have effective control on intake, that it's based on cow need and forage quality. It allows the cows to keep up rather than catch up. What would happen is if they saw those cows slipping in condition or the forage going down in condition, it was too late. They'd already made the transition so that those cows would come in and start eating at a higher level than they would have if they could just come to it gradually. So the cows keep up rather than catch up. And as you get the improvement in performance year after year, we think, and a lot of you guys have heard about this fetal imprinting, we think that that can really have a big driving factor in this because feeding that cow during pregnancy has an impact on how that calf will perform and how if it's a heifer calf, it will actually have a reproductive performance of that calf and her heifer calf beyond her. It goes clear to the grand dam or back to the grand dam. So this fetal programming thing we think is very exciting. We think it's something you can accomplish by using our IM technology. I've got a sweepstakes drawing back at my little stand back here. That's some little slips. I want everybody here to fill one of those out because I couldn't think of any folks that I would rather give some of our nice John Deere prizes or anything to than somebody from the Angus Association. And so make sure you stop in and sign up for that thing. Thank you so much for what you do every day for our industry. Thanks for the opportunity to visit with you this morning. That's all I got. Thanks.